Season 2, Episode 13. Today, we're heading into the wilderness. Hello, Father.
Hello, Daughter. Into the wilderness we go.
Oh, wait, haven't we already been there? Well, yeah, okay, but we're packing up boot camp. More on that in a moment. For now, an icebreaker. I think you are actually the one who proposed this icebreaker. What skill or hobby would you like to have picked up when you were younger?
Ah, yes. Well, I think I've often usually answered that with carpentry, right? That would have been nice to learn a little bit more about how to actually make things. I think partly because my dad used to make a piece of furniture every Christmas for my mom. So I was always kind of drawn to that, but I never learned that skill. So.
Yeah. Well, that would be a fun skill. I would like that. I think we talked about woodworking in a recent episode. So yeah, it checks. I could go so many different ways with this. My brain goes to gardening. I would also love woodworking stuff. But I also think when I think about skills when I'm young, I think about how many of my friends were in team sports. And I did a lot of like hodgepodgey things. And so I was my favorite that I stuck with was Taekwondo. But that was more of like a singular yeah. thing. And I think I would have liked to.
A lot of broken boards.
Yeah. I can. You know, kill you with my elbow.
Yep, exactly.
No. So, but yeah, sometimes I think, I wonder what it would have been like to be on like a more like team sport for a season or something. And I didn't really get that. But that's okay. I got a lot of other things.
Yeah. No, so. There's stuff we miss out on, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's fun stuff. All right. Well, the Israelites have been learning skills in boot camp. We have just been working through a bit of Leviticus. Last week, we talked about the Day of Atonement. And now boot camp is over. And it's time to pack up and hit the road onto the Promised Land.
Here we go.
Or is it?
Second star? No.
Indubitably. So we talked about this in a prior episode, but Deuteronomy 1, 2, and 3 starts off with what you have called, you know, one of the snarkiest or most sarcastic verses.
Yes.
Yeah. Where it's like, it's an 11-day journey. And then it follows up with,
right. Now
in the
40th
year. Right. And you're like, wait, what happened?
So, yeah, 11-day journey from Horeb to Kadesh, right? And then it's like, well, yeah. And in the 40th year, they intentionally set those things next to each other. Like, this is an 11-day journey. And in the 40th year, it's clearly intended to, like, drive home this fact that never supposed to be this way. In fact, we've probably said this before, but God had a 2-year boot camp, right? And that 2-year boot camp was basically several months to get from Egypt to Mount Sinai, like a whole year at Mount Sinai, and then a few more months from Mount Sinai up to Kadesh, from which he was going to launch a southern invasion into the land. But someone suggested, well, we should probably send some spies in to see what this is all about. And Moses approved the plan, and that's when everything came to a screeching halt.
Ah, I know. Yeah. So numbers is kind of the answer to the question: why 40 years?
Yeah.
Why did it take all that extra time? And so yes. Yeah, so the spies is our inciting incident. Do you want to unpack that a little bit more?
Yeah. So when they got to Kadesh, which is on the northern, you know, edge of the Sinai Peninsula, and it's right on the southern border of Canaan. God basically said, okay, it's time. We're gonna go in, which is kind of interesting because essentially you think about boot camp as training, and they sort of failed and failed and failed and failed. And now it's time to go in, which I think there's a lesson there in the first place too, and several lessons. One is, God isn't interested in perfection, right? We can fail, and, he doesn't give up on us because we failed. He's also, like, sometimes you can't grow and you can't learn if you don't fail along the way. I remember hearing, you know, your grandpa say many times, I don't know why people are so hard on folks who fail. You can't grow and you can't, you know, get better if you don't fail. And God clearly had that attitude towards them. So they had, although they'd failed multiple tests in the boot camp stage of things, he said, okay, it's time to go in. And it's at this point that the Israelites themselves said, well, maybe we should send in some spies first, see what we're up against. Moses approved the plan. They send them in. And they come back with this horrifying message, right? This horrifying report that said, well, we got good news and bad news. And the good news is the fruit here is amazing, right? We haven't seen anything like this in years. You know, literally, they're talking about taking two men to haul a pole with grapes on it. They've got, he said, this is truly a land flowing with milk and honey, truly a place of abundance. Couldn't ask for a better place. But, right? But. There's all this case that, but is the land is filled with enemies stronger than us. And they begin to delineate them. It's like, you know, I could just read it. It's like the Amalekites live in the Negev. Yeah, we've already had to fight a small group of them once in the desert, and Moses held his hands up the whole time. But that's just one enemy. They got the Amalekites, we got Canaanites, we got Amorites, we got Hethites. Hethites are the Hittites, which was one of the major empires of the ancient world. He's like, and there are, worst of all, Anakim, right? And so what are these Anakim or Anakim, right? And it says, in case we're not sure, it says in the text, they're the descendants of the Nephilim. And the Nephilim, as we probably all know by now, is what they called the children of the sons of God and the daughters of men before the days of Noah. And the Septuagint actually translates the word Nephilim, giants. And so this whole idea that there are giants in the land, in fact, Goliath later on is a descendant of Anak, which would be the Anakim. Mm-hmm. So Goliathism is one of the Anakim. And they're like, okay, this is just horrible. It's like, there's no way. Every one of these groups is stronger than us, and there's giants. So, and I said that we look like grasshoppers to the giants, and rightfully so, because that's how we felt in their presence. So they come back, and the whole Israelite community just starts wailing, right? They are just beside themselves. Now, we look at it from our sort of detached perspective, say, well, they got to just whoop the Egyptians, right? So how, you know, why couldn't they trust the God who had just decimated Egypt, parted the Red Sea? It's only been 2 years at this point. You know, it's like they who appeared to them at Mount Sinai, shook the mountain, spoke to them, you know, provided them with manna, given all, how, you know, and this is a legitimate question. And it's one of the reasons why their punishment is so strong. And that is that God has just done this to Egypt, who is way more powerful than all these people in Canaan. He's just shown them his power and his majesty on multiple occasions. And they should have by now learned that they could trust him. Mm-hmm. And instead, all they could see was the size of the enemy. They could not see God.
Yeah. Oh, this is unfair. Why? I thought we'd arrived. Where? Why battles? And God says, haven't you learned? I fight your battles.
Yeah. I'm not sure what they were expecting. If they thought, okay, we just got to get through the wilderness and then they're going to open up the doors and give us the land. I don't know what they were expecting, but it clearly something about this, I think what they realized was this is not possible, right? Mm-hmm. It is too big.
Unless God shows up.
Unless God shows up.
He has.
So, and there were, of course, you know, this is that classic children's song, 10 were bad and 2 were good, right? 12 men spied in Canaan's land.
Yeah, so more about that. So the two were good. They learned the lessons from boot camp, and the other 10 apparently did not. So what lessons did Joshua and Caleb learn?
The overall, the big lessons of boot camp are trust God and obey him, and he will take care of you, right? That's the number one overall lesson. Trust God, obey him, do things his way. He'll take care of the results. The second lesson of boot camp is stop thinking like a slave and start thinking like a child of the king, right? And start thinking like holy people, like someone who is holy and beloved and not of this world and connected to, you know, this amazing God. That's the second lesson of boot camp. But then after that, there are all these specific lessons that come out, like, is there no water? God can heal water that isn't drinkable. He can bring water from a rock. Are you under attack from an enemy you didn't see coming? God, you know, can use intercession to win that battle. And like, you know, do you have no food to eat? God can send quail, right? Could you have, there's a lot of lessons, right? Individual lessons like, and
water, wafers, water, war.
Yeah, water, wafers, water, war. There's a lot of ways God has provided for them. And more than anything, he is the God who took them out of Egypt, that smelting pot, it's called, that iron furnace. And he's like, never forget, you know, you were in an absolutely hopeless situation against an enemy so powerful that no one ever even dreamed that this could happen, yet here we are. And he's like, so that's the core lesson. I have given you every reason to understand that I can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how about what we can learn from these lessons?
Yeah. I mean, we learned the same lessons, right? Yeah. And that is, we see this over and over again in our own lives. God gets us out of one situation and we're like, we find ourselves in the next one and we're going, oh, but yeah, maybe I better take care of this one myself. Mm-hmm. And that happens over and over again where we stop seeking God. We stop learning what is trusting him look like in this situation? Because what God ultimately wants is not for us to follow a life of principles.
Mm.
He wants us to follow a life of relationship with him where we are just connecting with him on everything. Like in the emotional healing realm, in working with people through the years, one of the things I discovered was that you can't always just rely on principles of how things work to know what to do. You have to stop and you have to pause and you have to pray. And I would pray and they would pray, you know, and I'd see what I felt like God was saying to me. They'd see what God was saying to them. And I found that God rarely used the same strategy twice, right? Mm-hmm. That he had a specific strategy for every situation that was in front of us. And that's kind of how God wants us to live life, mm-hmm. right? Come, you know, don't just assume that because I did it one way in the past, I'm going to do it that way in the future. What is consistent in all of this is I will be there. You can trust me. And we should stay connected as we go through this.
Mm-hmm. The formula isn't strike this rock in this manner and this is what will happen. The formula is seek me.
Yeah. It's not next time you come into bitter water, throw a stick in it or mm-hmm. add some salt, everything will be fine. That's not the point. The mm-hmm. point is you run into something like that, go find God, see what he wants to do and mm-hmm. do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go back to 10 who didn't, so there was a very skewed report that turned into the people saying, no, we don't want to go in. We don't trust God. Raylan, can you pick up the story from there?
Yeah. So, literally it says chapter 14 of Numbers, verse 1, the whole community broke into loud cries and the people wept that night. All the Israelites complained about Moses and Aaron, and the whole community told them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, if only we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to die by the sword? And then we get to this line, our wives and our children will become plunder. And, you know, God is not deaf, right? He hears these things. He goes, so you're worried about your wives and your children? You know, and what ends up happening is he says, well, your children are going to end up taking this place, not you. It's like mm-hmm. far from them being like offered up on the platter to be destroyed, they're actually going to do what you are not going to do. Because one of the things we see is that God is just. And one of the ways that his justice is seen is that his punishment always fits the crime. And there is something almost poetic about the justice when he meets it out. Like this is exactly the right judgment for what has happened here. Now, before we get to the judgment, we have Joshua and Caleb falling down in front of the people saying, no, we should, you know, we should trust. In fact, one of the classic lines here is Caleb quieted the people. This is verse 30 of chapter 13. Caleb quieted the people in the presence of Moses and said, let's go up now, right? Let's take possession of the land because we can certainly do it. And that thing, we can certainly do it, was, You know, based on his confidence in God, he had learned the lessons of the boot camp. And for some reason, the rest of them had not.
And even with the cry, and then once God gives them the, okay, you're not going to go in. And they're like, no, well, okay, we'll go do it in our own. And he's like, nope, the last thing I told you was no, go head that direction. And yeah. Now you're disobeying again.
So the end of the story, right, is that once God delivers his judgment, okay, you're going to stay in the wilderness. And you said, why didn't we die in the wilderness? Guess what? You're going to die in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in other words, every aspect of his judgment was essentially them taking their accusations against God and turning it back on them. Mm-hmm. And so they, when they realize that they have been doomed, in a sense, to wander in this wilderness forever, then they go, no, 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 no. They panic and they're like, we'll go in. And they try to invade the land of their own strength. And they were absolutely right. They were not strong enough to take these people on unless God showed up. And God had already said, I'm not in this. Mm-hmm. And this is also where we distinguish presumption from faith, right? Faith is obeying God even when what he's asking you to do doesn't look possible, right? Mm-hmm. So what Caleb is saying is faith. And that is, yeah, we can go in. I know there's Nephilim. I know there's giants. I know there's, you know, strong people, but we have Yahweh, right? So let's do this. That's faith. Presumption is God saying, don't go in there. Don't go do this. This is not my plan for you. And you insisting that this ought to be God's plan. So we're going to do it anyway. That's presumption.
Mm-hmm. And so what we see is, are there consequences to abandoning the journey? Yes. But does that mean God's just done with them, or that there's, you know, the total end of the journey? No, God still gets the people as a whole to the promise. Like, God still gets the people of Israel to the promised land, but there is a generation who...
Well, I think about this generation, you know, quite a bit. You know, here they are. They've just been sentenced to 38 years in the wilderness. They know it. They have been put in a box, so to speak. You're going to spend the next 38 years in this box called the desert. It feels like somebody who's just been given a sentence in prison, and you know for the next 38 years, you're going to be in prison. Similar issues here. And that is, okay, but what are you going to do with those 38 years? Are you going to sit there and be bitter and rebellious and demonstrate to everybody why you're there in the first place? Or are you going to learn some lessons here and make this the best that it can be despite that? And what we see from Israel in these 38 years is bitterness and rebellion and complaining on an escalating scale that just confirms why God did this in the first place, because they did not, a single time, they mm-hmm. did not trust him and obey him with anything that happened during that wilderness. Mm-hmm. So the reason we call it the wilderness of the mediocrity is that they're fighting battles. They were afraid of the battles in Canaan, but they're still fighting battles in the wilderness. It's just that these battles aren't gaining ground for them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that all of us find ourselves in places like that. There are times when decisions we've made have created consequences we can't get out of, right? And I think about people whose marriages have ended and, you know, their kids don't live with them anymore. And there are some realities here that they're living with. There are consequences here. They can't change those. But that doesn't mean now, you know, I should live in bitterness and anger and rebellion and become a miserable, you know, angry person as a result. I need to look at the situation I'm at, say, okay, this is what I'm facing. This is reality. How do I walk with God through this now? Mm-hmm. And I look at other situations like that where things that I have done have created consequences. Maybe they were my fault, maybe they weren't, but I am looking at consequences now that I can't change. And I can either be angry and bitter over the fact that I can't change those consequences, or I can find God in the midst of those consequences. And that's really what this is calling us to do.
Yeah. Could you give us some practical next steps for what that might look like?
In terms of finding God,
sure. If you're in the midst of a wilderness and you've been miring yourself in despair or complaint or what you know, a way to turn that around.
Sure, it's like, well, I've talked to people who are just so angry about the family they grew up in, for example. And it's like, and they're jealous. You know, you've heard it your whole life. You know, you should be so thankful you grew up in the family you're in. And yeah. And you're like, well, I'm sorry you didn't have a good family. But there are people who are just locked in that. It's become a prison for them. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to actually be better off if they can find ways to forgive their family for what's going on. If they're currently in a really messy relationship, if they're in a really bad situation, you know, they can either be really angry, like, God, why are you permitting this? God, why are you allowing me to go through this? Are you angry at me? What's going on? Or you can seek God in the midst of this. And it's like, God, what is the best, healthiest, wisest way to walk through what I have to walk through right now? And I've just seen people go both directions on this. There are people who are in really, really hard situations that they can't change, who are actually flourishing in their walk with God. It's not life isn't easy, but their walk with God is something I look up to. Mm-hmm. And there are people in situations like this who almost refuse to have a walk with God because mm-hmm. they're so angry about what's going on. And Israel kind of fell into the last.
Mm-hmm. So would you say it? I mean, maybe first steps look different for different people, but a first step being forgiveness or a first step being, so I don't know, could people in that situation go straight into listening prayer or is there?
Well, they can. Mm-hmm. So like I said, they're like, if you look at what should Israel have done, mm-hmm. Israel should have repented and said, what do you want us to do? What do you want us to do? And if it's turn around, go and head back into the desert, then okay, we will turn around, go back into the desert. But from now on, their vow should have been, we will obey you from now on. Mm-hmm. But that's not what they did.
Mm-hmm. They didn't repent.
They didn't really repent. Yeah. They said, oh, they said the words, we were wrong. We should have gone in. We're going to do it now. But that's not what God was asking at that point. Mm-hmm. And so, the answer is always, how do I should seek God and I should, push into that relationship with him. And so that looks different. So they needed true repentance mm-hmm. and they needed to forgive Moses, right? They needed to forgive some people for even perceptions that they had about them. And they needed to obey God, knowing that whatever happens next is going to go better if we obey.
Yeah. Okay, good word. I'm going to pause for some announcements. First, well, actually, both of these. Are you wanting to see Deeper Walk people in person? First announcement is that we are joining the Disciple Making Forum May 1st and 2nd in Indianapolis, Indiana. And we'll be along a lot of other fun ministries and doing good content. And, you know, so if you are into disciple making and want to come say hi to us, we will have a booth there. We'll have several sessions and that will be a delight. And second is Deeper Walk is having summer intensives at our Joy Center in Hobart, Indiana. There are several happening. Dan and Sarah Allison are going to be leading an intensive through spiritual warfare tools and training. Melissa Finger is going to be covering complex trauma, what every people helper needs to know. And Don Whitestone is going to be leading a weekend of prayer for our children, as well as a celebration graduation reunion for School of Ministry. All of those opportunities are happening this summer, and we encourage you to check into it, DWISOM.org. You can find more information there. Early bird pricing ends May 1st, and the deadline for all the summer intensive registrations is May 22nd. So if you're interested, DWISOM.org. All right, Father, any final thoughts?
So one of my favorite verses is in Numbers chapter 14, verse let's see if I get this right here. Yeah, verse 9. Caleb is giving his reasoning for why he thinks they should go into the land. And he says this, an English translation I have here says, their protection has been removed from them. The Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them. Now, the literal word protection is their cloud has been removed. Their shade has been removed. So in a desert area, sun beating down, cloud was protection. So he's So they've kind of interpreted it for us in the translation. But something in the spirit of Joshua and Caleb sensed that God had already done something in the spirit realm and that this place was ready to fall. And so they said, one, their protection is gone. By that, I think they mean their spiritual protection. Some kind of a spiritual battle had already been won. And second, the Lord is with us,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there was this, in Caleb had this spiritual sensitivity to recognize that, you know what, this is actually the time is ripe, whereas the others were completely walking in the flesh. And so Caleb is the model of living in the spirit, even though it's an Old Testament saint, he was living in the spirit, whereas the rest of the community was walking in the flesh. And, you know, just like Paul has a lot to say that the spirit brings life and peace and joy and love, and the flesh brings division and anger and murder and all these other things. And we see it played out in the wilderness stories.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I look forward to continuing next week. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the trail today. Did you like this episode? Would you like more people to see it? This is the part where I ask you to like, comment, subscribe, share with a friend. And hey, do you love this channel? One of the best ways that you can support us is by becoming a Deeper Walk Trailblazer. Thanks again. We'll see you back on the trail next week.